Welcome to the Lavo Show podcast. Conversations with outstanding human beings whose life has been inspired and transformed by Osho. Take a deep breath and enjoy the show.
Enjoy the show.
Hello and thanks for tuning in. My name is Swaram and I'm the host. Today our guest is Swami Prem Vandan. Vandan took sannyas in 1981 and over the past three decades, he has become a multi-award winning producer and director of more than 50 documentaries, film and television series. I'm so happy to have Vandan on the show and I hope you enjoy it. Vandan, welcome to the show. How are you?
Thank you. I'm really good. I'm happy to be talking with you.
So to start, tell us a little bit about how you came across Osho.
Yes, of course. I'm English and I was living in England and in Somerset. And a friend of ours went to India and came back very, very excited, wearing bright orange and told us all about what she'd been up to there. And so slowly, it's a long story, but slowly the one after another of us went to India and came back dressed in orange, as it was in those days. I was very resistant for a couple of years. I must say I didn't want a guru. I didn't want a crutch. And I was like, I can do all this by myself. But, you know, circumstances, basically, as I said to you earlier, I had so many reasons not to go and no reason to go. But I decided I would just take that jump. And I leapt and I went to Pune. And very glad that I did. As I said, I was one of the very last to take sannyas directly from Osho. And it changed my life. It's the singular best thing I ever did in my whole life.
Wow, that's quite a statement. So I'll come back to you and Osho and how meeting Osho changed your life. But I'd like to jump straight into the main topic, which is around your work as a director and filmmaker in relation, of course, to Osho. There are hundreds of books of Osho and about Osho, but not a proper movie. And recently, Wild Wild Country came out. It took two non-sannyasins to make this acclaimed Netflix docu-series. And of course, we mentioned you are an established producer, director, and a sannyasin. So I've got a couple of questions on this. First, what do you think about Wild Wild Country? And the second is the $1,000 question. Have you ever considered making a documentary or film about Osho?
I can answer the second question first. I have never thought about making a film about Osho. I would love to. If somebody wanted to ask me to make one, I would be delighted to do it. But I just figured there's so much stuff out there and he can always talk best for himself. I know a friend of mine many years ago, about 25 years ago, made a film here in Australia called The Spiritual Terrorist. And I think that was about Osho. I never actually saw it. With regard to the Netflix series, I actually really liked it and I learned a lot of stuff from it. I thought it was very balanced and very fair. There were things that I did not know. In particular, I didn't know that they'd rattled Osho around for 3 or 4 weeks from one city to another, changing the jail every day. And I must say I was horrified that he'd been treated like that. But all in all, I thought that the series was very fair. I was a little bit irritated by the style as a filmmaker, where they had everybody talking out of the frame, and I just thought, why do that? But that was just a small thing. The series generally I thought was pretty good.
Yeah, so it's interesting to dig a little bit deeper on the style, because, you know, just picking on your expertise as a film director. Mm-hmm. So can you expand a little bit on that, on the fact that you mentioned that you didn't appreciate that they were taking people out of context? Is that what you are saying?
No, not so much out of context. It was the actual style of photography. So what you would normally do is if you're going to do a mid-shot or a close-up shot of somebody, you would have them so that they're fully in the frame and probably talking into the frame of the picture. It's just what people do. But the filmmakers in this particular case decided that they would have somebody on right on the edge of the picture and almost miss them in some cases. And it was a stylistic decision, which I just found irritating. That's all. And what people were saying was very interesting. And I didn't feel that they were taken out of context. On the contrary, I thought that sannyasins and non-sannyasins got a really, really good, fair hearing, basically.
Okay, fair enough. So it's more about the style of the technique
style, yeah.
And more aesthetic, which I personally didn't even notice. Okay. So I have the feeling that this is just the beginning. It was hugely successful and sparked lots of interest, especially in new people, not just in the sannyas community, which is big enough. Do you think there will be a sequence, a serial?
There may be room for a sequel. I think that what would be good to focus on would be the fact that people, as we speak, still today, are taking sannyas. And that, I have to say, surprises me. It pleases me in a way, but it surprises me that the straight other, I mean, almost 30 years after Osho died, that people are still on that path and connecting with him on a personal level. It's very, very impressive.
It is indeed. And in fact, the reason why I'm talking to you guys who are with Osho is also to kind of pass on the testimony and inspired new generations of young people. Looking at your filmography and the work you have produced, I had a look at your website. It seems you have a prominent interest in humanistic and social aspects, including animal welfare. How did this inclination develop in you?
Well, maybe it was awakened by Osho. I've always had an interest. I remember saying to my father when I was a child, basically, that I was very interested in sociology. So I've always been interested in people. It is my passion, if you like, to work with people. As I work also as a counsellor. In fact, I actually run shame workshops because I think that's an issue that really needs to be dealt with around the world. People have poor self-esteem because of the shame that they carry, and I try and help people on that basis. In fact, I'd really like to go to the States or go to Europe and run workshops there on shame. If anybody's listening and they feel like inviting me, I would be delighted to come and do it. So I've just had an interest in people and humanistic ways ever since I was a child, basically.
Okay, so we'll talk a little bit more about the workshops you do on shame, but let's stay with Osho for a moment and with this topic, and how taking sannyas and meeting Osho has shaped your life and specifically the work you do.
Wow, that's a big question. Osho often used to say, be in the marketplace, but not of the marketplace. And I think that's something I've taken very much to heart. And what I interpret from that is, yes, it's possible to live in the world. You don't have to be a hermit on top of a mountain or whatever to carry out commercial enterprises. So in my life, that's what I've done for the last, whatever it is, 30 odd years, is to almost take a step backwards wherever I am, and to be more the observer and not for my ego to get too much involved. Obviously, sometimes that's difficult. We all have egos, but at the same time, it has helped me to maintain that way of being. You refer to the films that I've made. It's possible that my interest in those particular subjects was shaped by that humanistic attitude. I don't know. But the style of life, the way I live my life, the people that I mix with, the people that I don't want to mix with, all comes about through sannyas. Also the meditative aspects of it, I suppose. I'm not a meditator. In fact, I've never been a seeker, per se, but certainly the ability, the mindfulness that Osho brought to us, even though we never used the word in those days, has been very, very important in my life.
And I think you made a great point on Osho wanting us to meditate, but be in the world. So, you know, be in the marketplace, but not being identified with the marketplace, which sounds very easy, but it's a big challenge. Because it's difficult, per se, to try and be aware, even if you are in a cave, in nature, and never mind trying to be in when you are facing, you know, the normal challenges of modern-day life.
Yes, I think that's true. I mean, originally, of course, when he was called Bhagwan, I remember him saying many times, you're all Bhagwan, you will all carry my message. And I think that is true, that a lot of people have, hesitate to say graduated, but risen to the occasion and live their lives, even if they don't proselytize or put forward his particular message, that they live the lives of his people. I can't find a better word to say that, basically.
Absolutely. So, are you still in touch with the Osho community?
No, not really. There used to be, I live in Sydney, and there used to be about 5,000 or 6,000 sannyasins living in Sydney in those days. So what happened in 1985-86, they closed the center here, and the sannyasins dispersed. A lot of them went to Byron Bay, and Byron became famous for that. So I have friends who are sannyasins, and we sometimes have conversations, but there is no community per se in Sydney anymore. There used to be a darshan that happened once a week, and that stopped. I beg your pardon, satsang that used to happen once a week, but that stopped. So there's very little activity that actually is available.
But I understand that at some point you wanted to create a community for creative people, specifically for older sannyasins, which eventually turned into a meditation center in Sydney. Is that still there? And can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so it occurred to me that it would be nice to have what's called a living intentional community, where people of all ages, similar way of thinking, sannyasins, but also fellow travelers, could live and work together, not in a communist style, but, you know, individually, each with a focus on creativity of different kind, whether that's filmmaking or writing or music or poetry or whatever it might be, but that would be the focus of the community. So I started looking for land and started looking about raising money to buy the land, etc. And it occurred to me it would take some time, so I thought, well, rather that the community is going to be called Leela, for obvious reasons, and rather than waiting for the land, let's, you know, set up Leela in the city. So I did, found beautiful premises in Paddington in Sydney, and we set up, and I supported it financially for 2 years, more than 2.5 years, and eventually it just grew and grew and grew. Instead of it being a focus on creativity, it actually became a space for workshops and that kind of thing. And finally, people around me said they would like a larger space. So I found a larger space nearby, and we rent that. But I couldn't support it financially anymore, and I just decided to hand it over to them. And it's now been going for 2 more years, and it is very successful. There are lots of beautiful workshops and things that happen there, sessions. And if anybody's interested, it's called Leela, and it's the Leela community in Darlinghurst in Sydney. It's still going, but I'm personally, I've handed it all over to other people now to run, and I'm focusing on my own creative activities, filmmaking, writing, etc., etc.
Oh, that's amazing. I mean, you're the founder, the creator, and then when things pick up, your job is done. You hand it over.
Yes, that's how I see it.
That's beautiful. And are there Osho-related activities going on happening there?
Not specifically, no. Occasionally, somebody will come in and do dynamic meditation or the occasional workshop. But no, it's a center for all. It's very eclectic, that anybody who wants to do anything can run it from there. So no. So again, there are no sannyas or Osho related activities happening in Sydney. There is a in Byron Bay, there's an intentional community which is called Gondwana, and that's also become quite famous, and people live there, and they have a regular Wednesday night dinner for visitors, so that's really nice if anybody's interested. But there's very little. It's very low key in Australia. I don't know what's happening around the world, but certainly here there's practically no activity at all. It's very much people keeping to themselves and their friends and relatives, that's all.
Interesting, because, you know, in other parts of the world, actually, there is a trend where Osho is flourishing again. I mean, specifically in India, there are lots going on. But even in Europe, there are very successful centers and festivals in Israel. And, you know, I've just been talking recently to Satya Vedant, and we discussed how Osho activities are actually increasing. And so, you know, it's interesting. And let's see, maybe the tide will turn in Australia at some point as well.
Maybe.
Okay, so let's go back to the workshops you mentioned before that you ran on shame. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that and why you chose to work particularly on the theme of shame.
Yes. So actually, we're going to be talking about my book, I suppose, quite soon, The God That You Are. I wrote a draft of that, and in that I talked about people's emotions, and I talked about some emotions that were not necessary. And a couple of those were guilt and shame. And I showed it to a friend, and the friend said, "You don't know what you're talking about," basically. And it started me thinking about those particular things, guilt and shame, and in particular shame, and what it is and how it affects us and the impact that it has on society generally. It's for me, all strife, all wars, all disagreements come from people's self-esteem or poor self-esteem. And that self-esteem, in fact, is very much impacted by people's levels of shame. And it's curious. It's been curious to me over the last couple of years running these workshops, how many people carry a certain amount of shame and where it comes from. So that's been fascinating. The workshops are called Exploring Shame. So we do two things. We look at what shame is, and then we look at what we can do in order to free ourselves from the shame that we carry, and therefore help our levels of self-esteem. And that's been very rewarding for me, because people come up to me afterwards and share what's been happening for them, and how it just a simple workshop can free them from some level of shame. So that's been really good.
Okay, that's very interesting. And without giving away too much, because obviously you want people to come and experience, but would you be able to give us some general... Do you do more of a verbal approach, therapeutic approach, or is more based on meditation or kind of emotional work, or what's happened?
So it's a combination. There's cognitive work, so we're sitting talking to each other. Sometimes people share, and sometimes people reveal stuff that they've never been able to talk about in the past. So it's very much about sitting around in a circle talking, but there's also NLP work, there's also meditation, and a whole variety of different processes to actually allow. I mean, the biggest problem with shame is people are ashamed of having shame, so they will not allow themselves to even acknowledge it. So once that's the first step to anything, if you want to heal anything, is actually to acknowledge that it exists. Once you can acknowledge that it exists, then you can start to look at what your shame is. And what I discover for many people is that there was some core, not exactly always an event, but often an event. Sometimes people are just shamed by their parents from the moment that they're born. I have a friend, and she was constantly told by her mother, you know, "What's wrong with you? What's wrong with you?" So she grew up believing that there was something wrong with her, even though there was nothing wrong with her. We have these core events in our lives, often when we're very small, very young. And what happens then is subsequent events compound that shame. So the shame grows like a snowball, if you like, inside of us. And the secret is to start dealing with the core shame, and from there unwind the rest of the shame as much as possible that's happened in our lives.
Okay, I get it. And I think the work you're doing is very important, because it's true, there are lots of people who have this feeling inside and it's kind of paralyzing. You know, I talk out of my own experience. For years, I had this feeling of shame, and, you know, it prevented me to do many things. But and then eventually, thankfully, it went. And I actually don't even know exactly how.
Well, I'd be I guess more about that. Yeah.
I guess years and years of dynamic and meditation, and you know, just you know, keep going, and then it disappears. It's kind of evaporated. It's not like that something particularly happened or any revelation. It's just kind of you know, the sun and the snow. So, but anyway, that's just me.
It may well be for the best way to deal with shame, if it's something that a person is ashamed about, is to actually talk about that thing, whatever it is. And it may well be that you did have that experience, that you actually spoke many times about the thing which was causing you shame, and that's how it starts to dissipate.
That's a plausible explanation, but you know, the good thing is it's gone. Okay, Vandana. So, what are your current activities? What are your latest projects in terms of the workshops you do, the book that you mentioned that you just wrote, or any other movies or documentaries or anything that you're up to?
Yes. So, the book that is just been published, as you mentioned, it's called The God That You Are. And on it, I use my legal name, which is Martin Guinness. And that is available on Amazon and online through the website that you mentioned, which is lifedancerpublishing.com. This is really, in a way, carrying on Osho's work. The book itself very much follows, it's not based on his teachings, it's based on my learnings from his teachings and other things that I've experienced in life. But there are big chapters on accepting yourself. There are big chapters on how to behave with integrity, etc., etc. It really originally was a book for men, because there are so many books out there for goddesses, and that's what inspired me. But there's very little out there for men as gods, you know. So I thought, okay, I'll write a book for the gods that we are as men. But in point of fact, 95% of it is suitable for women to read and would get something from it. So I have had amazing feedback from people about the book and how enlightening they felt about the book. So that's one thing that I'm doing, and I'm very proud of this book. I actually also wrote it for myself, I have to say, and I do dip into it from time to time and remind myself about certain things, because I think that's one of the challenges in life, is actually reminding ourselves. And Osho also talked about this, you know. So that's called The God That You Are. With my partner now, in terms of film, we're making a documentary film called Yoni. It's about female empowerment, and it will be possibly come in two forms. One will be a 90-minute feature film documentary, and the other, we're also looking at making it into a four-part television series. And we've done a lot of filming on that and editing, so we're busy doing that as I speak, and hope to have that finished next year. And I can tell you more about that when it's done. But that's been a great learning experience for me. I've had the opportunity to interview many people, a lot of women, but a few men, in various aspects to do with the Yoni.
Fascinating, and clearly there is quite a lot on your plate, and just shows how energetic and creative you are, which is amazing. And I think you inspired me to get your book and have a read, first as a man, because it's true that there is lots of support groups, if you like, for women, but not much about men. We don't tend to get together too much and share our stuff, which is important. And then also I like that what you said very honestly, that whatever you're sharing is your own experience of what you personally have learned from Osho. And I think personally for me, it's the same story. I mean, Osho is there, and then, you know, it's the source, and then people go there, can drink from the source, and then they metabolize, and then they share what they've learned, and it's different from everyone. And, you know, if you're just trying to put out Osho's word, it's just impossible. You can't do it. It's not, for me, the way to do it, because Osho doesn't need any messenger, anyone to interpret him, you know? You know, we are all individuals, and we have our own story, and obviously we learn from Osho, we imbibe him, and then whatever comes out of us, it's our own story. It's not Osho's story.
That's correct. Absolutely, yeah. And also, it's the progression, because it is 30 years later, and the world has changed. So the messages that we need to be putting out need to be more up to date. You know, what he had to say is immortal, but at the same time, the world, I don't know how he would feel about Donald. I can just imagine him sitting in the morning talking about Donald Trump, and I just imagine how hilarious that would be, the things that he would have to say.
Yeah, that's so true, you know. I miss his humor and his way of taking a piece, really, of all this idiocy. and now he would have such great material to do that. Okay, Vandan, look, we are heading towards the end, and I've got three final questions for you.
Yes, sir.
So the first one is, what's your morning routine? How does your morning look like in the first couple of hours of your day?
Well, it depends. I might wake up and make love to my partner. That might be the first thing that I do. After that, get up and have breakfast. I'm studying at the moment, so that forms a certain part of my routine. But it's very much taking care of business, literally and metaphorically. So it just depends on... I live a very unstructured life in terms of filming. So we might be interviewing somebody one day and then not again for the next 2 weeks. Or I might be sitting editing for a couple of hours and then leave that and go and do something different. So it's not a regular routine outside of that, basically.
Okay, fair enough. So the second question is, what's your favorite meditation and why?
Apart from anything else, I also make jewelry. I used to be a professional jeweler when I was in England, and also I lived in Sanya's commune called Sangam in France, and I was a professional jeweler there. And I used to find that making jewelry was the most amazing meditation, because I got lost in what I was doing. I wasn't thinking. I was just completely focused in the mindfulness way in what I was doing. Like 2 or 3 hours would go past, and I was completely lost in that. It was the most amazing thing. I still make a little bit of jewelry, but not so much. So I would have to say my favorite meditation would be Yoga Nidra. And that's because it's one of the most relaxing yogas that I know, and I can lie down on the floor and not have to do anything.
Quite the polar opposite of dynamic meditation.
Very much the opposite. Which, by the way, I always hate.
Fair enough. That's dynamic. You love it or you hate it. It's no middle ground there.
My favorite ashram meditation is Nataraj, because I love to dance. And that was always beautiful, but I don't get the opportunity so much anymore.
Okay, great. So the last question is, you lived the Osho experiment. You were one of the pioneers in this movement of creating the new man Zorba the Buddha. What mm-hmm. does it mean to you personally to be with Osho today in 2018?
That's a very difficult question, Swern. Osho will always be in my heart. There's no doubt about that. I think about him from time to time, but, you know, I think he talked about us, or himself really, as a reflection of us. So I try and live the way that I think he encouraged us to live. And in fact, I very much talk about those things without mentioning his name. I talk about those things in my book. Authenticity has always been important to me, but it became even more important after meeting him. The authentic man and woman, I think, are crucial to a proper way of living. So I'm floundering around here because it's really hard to answer that question. You want to give me some clues? I can say yes or no.
No, I appreciate that you find it difficult, because it is difficult, and that's why I ask it.
Thank you, Master.
Now I'm very curious, because, you know, one of the points for me is also to show Osho's relevance today and Osho's impact on people's life, and how people who have lived with him then kind of realize his message today. So, you know, I think you gave the answer, you answered to the question.
Okay.
So, Vandan, thank you so much. That's the end of the show. And thank you for connecting with me, for sharing your insight. And I will link your website and anything else, if you have a Facebook page, to the show notes of the podcast. So if anyone is interested, they can get in touch with you, either to get your book or to attend one of your workshops. Or, you know, if they are curious of, you know, maybe they like one of your films or documentaries and they want to ask you questions, whatever. So just put your contact details there.
Thank you very much. It's been my pleasure.
Thank you. Lots of love and a big hug.
Yeah, you too. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Lavo Show podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, you can show your appreciation by leaving a review on iTunes. Visit lavoshow.com for new episodes, blogs, and much more.